This is VOA News by remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. While deaths from the coronavirus in the United States are mounting rapidly, public health experts are seeing a flicker of good news. A second surge of confirmed cases appears to be leveling off. Scientists are not celebrating by any means, warning that the trend is driven by four big hard-hit places, Arizona, California, Florida, and Texas, and that cases are rising in close to 30 states in all, with the outbreak center of gravity seemingly shifting from the Sun Belt toward the Midwest. More than 670,000 people have died globally from COVID-19, more than 152,000 in the United States. The number of infections is more than 17.2 million globally and approximately 4.5 million in the U.S. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro was seen removing his face mask at a public event after his wife Michelle tested positive for COVID-19 Thursday. And the spread of the novel coronavirus showed no signs of slowing in the country, with the world's second worst outbreak after the United States. After weeks of quarantine, after testing positive for the virus, President Bolsonaro recently tested negative, but did say Thursday that he was fighting some sort of an infection. Bolsonaro has downplayed the COVID-19 pandemic and has often said the social distancing, lockdowns, and other protocols would hurt Brazil's economy more than the virus would. Well, India has far more people, with many living in densely populated areas. It ranks number three, far behind Brazil, in the number of COVID-19 deaths and infections. Its health ministry said Thursday that it has one of the lowest mortality rates in the world, boasting that more than 1 million people who were infected with coronavirus have recovered. However, the total number of cases in the country is still surging, with more than 50,000 new cases registered in just one day recently. The capital city of New Delhi, which emerged as one of the worst hit cities in the country, is now seeing a gradual decline. This is VOA News. The White House and some of its Republican allies in the U.S. Senate are signaling that they do want to extend at least temporarily a $600 per week expanded jobless benefit that has helped people and their families and keep the economy afloat during the COVID-19 pandemic. The move looks to be too little too late to prevent the lapse of the benefit officially on Friday. Democrats have so far rejected an extension and say the next relief bill needs to move as a complete package. Before Mr. Trump spoke, top Senate Republican Mitch McConnell adjourned the chamber for the weekend while taking a procedural step that could allow voting on a potential compromise sometime next week. Hong Kong has disqualified 12 pro-democracy candidates from legislative elections, citing their opposition to the new national security law imposed on the city by Beijing. But the Chinese government denies that it's impending on civil rights. Disqualified include activist Joshua Wong and others who won an unofficial primary vote held by the opposition camp earlier this month. The government ban, which it says could be followed by further disqualifications, comes a month after Beijing imposed a new law to rein in dissent to the semi-autonomous city. It will throw China further on a collision course with the West. Critics say it wants to curb the ascendancy of a young generation of Democrats after they swept district council elections last year. Chances for a historic opposition majority in Hong Kong's mini parliament could take a further blow if the September 6th vote is postponed as expected. Taiwan's former president, Li Tongwei, who brought direct elections and other democratic changes to the self-governed island despite fierce saber-rattling by China, died Thursday evening. That's according to local media reports. He was 97. He strove to create a separate non-Chinese identity for Taiwan, angering not only China, which considers the island part of its territory, but also members of his Nationalist Party, who hoped to return victorious to the mainland. Li later openly endorsed formal independence for the island, but illness in his later years prompted him to largely withdraw from public life. Former President Barack Obama has used Representative John Lewis's funeral to issue a stark warning that the voting rights and equal opportunity the late civil rights icon championed are under increasing threat and heading into the 2020 election. Obama urged Congress on Thursday to honor Lewis by revitalizing the Voting Rights Act, the law he was willing to die for. Find more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. Today is Friday, July 31st. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington, filling in for James Butte. We have a great show for you lined up, so do not reduce the volume. Here are the stories we are covering. Anti-government protests are planned for today in Zimbabwe.
We support their constitutional right to embark in a peaceful constitutional protest against the regime.
That was Zimbabwe's MDC Alliance Opposition Party Vice President, Tendai Biti. Kenya arrests a wildlife and drug smuggling kingpin. Fistfights, tear gas, and guns in Nairobi's city government. Sudanese Muslims celebrate the Eid al-Adha festival amid COVID-19. And local officials in Nigeria struggle to trace people exposed to the coronavirus.
The first time was about 7. Second was about 14. The conclusion, when that case was done, I think it was about 70-something.
That was Danjuma Dogo, a community leader in Nigeria, speaking about the rise in COVID-19 cases. All those stories, plus Samson Omale's sports and a tribute to a giant of African music, are next on Daybreak Africa. Our top story is in Zimbabwe, where opposition members and activists have planned to hold nationwide protests today against what they say is widespread government corruption. The ruling party and government appear to be shaken by the expected demonstrations. Late Thursday night, police arrested activists accused of organizing the protests. According to reports, if the activists were not present at their homes, police seized family members instead. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe's president has referred to protest organizers as terrorists, while the Ministry of Home Affairs has labeled the planned marches as unconstitutional. Journalist Kudzai Zvinovace reports.
Security has been tightened in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. Checkpoints into the central business district are stricter, turning back almost everyone who does not work in essential services. On Wednesday, President Emmerson Mnangagwa gave a stern warning to protest organizers.
I want to warn the organizers of this ill-fated demonstration that our security services will be vigilant and on high alert to appropriately respond to their shenanigans.
Journalist Hopo Chimono's bail hearing has been further postponed to Monday. He was arrested last week for allegedly using his social media following to incite people to protest on the 31st. Jacob Ngarivume, leader of Transform Zimbabwe political party, was arrested on similar charges. He is the face of the 31 July protests after calling for Zimbabweans to come out to protest against what he called rampant corruption in the country. Minister of Home Affairs, Kazembe Kazembe, however, links the planned protests to the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, or MDC Alliance.
31 July is a planned insurrection and a naked, illegal, and unconstitutional attempt to seize power. It is about the MDC Alliance attempting to seize power. It is about the MDC Alliance attempting to violently overturn the people's verdict of 31 July 2018.
Earlier this week, the police issued a list of political activists and union leaders they want to interview in connection with the planned protests. Those on the list have gone into hiding. There are reports that police have raided their homes. Despite the government's accusations, the MDC Alliance has not taken ownership of the protests, but has pledged support. MDC Alliance Vice President Tendai Biti spoke to the media this week.
31 July 2020, we support the right of the citizens who have organized 31 July 2020. We support their constitutional right to embark in a peaceful constitutional protest against the regime codified in Section 59 of the Constitution.
While there is significant support for the protest on social media, it's not clear how many will turn out. Various government departments and the ruling ZANU-PF have issued numerous threats to would-be protesters. Government critics say That reveals how alarmed they are. But many Zimbabweans are worried, given that in the past few years, government forces have injured and killed people taking part in earlier protests. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
Conservationists are lauding the arrest in Kenya of alleged wildlife trafficker Abubakar Mansour Mohammed Sarur, who is also wanted in the United States. Sarur is accused of trafficking ivory and rhino horn, as well as conspiracy to launder money and distribute heroin. Experts say the East Africa region has become a hub for the illegal trade, as Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
With the help of U.S. officials, Kenyan authorities arrested Wednesday the alleged wildlife trafficker in the coastal city of Mombasa. Philip Murudhi is a vice president of Species Conservation and Science at the Africa Wildlife Foundation, and he welcomed the arrest of Sarur.
By catching a kingpin, you can actually disrupt the illegal wildlife trade. It's a dangerous individual who has funding and who is involved in multiple illegalities, and those are the people, the kingpins that you really want to catch. One of the weaknesses of fighting the illegal wildlife trade is that we don't get to the kingpins. A lot of the arrests are of the smaller guys.
Sarur is charged with conspiracy to traffic 190 kilograms of rhino horns and 10 tons of ivory worth more than $7 million. The Kenyan national also is accused of money laundering and distribution of heroin. Investigators believe Sarur is a member of the Karoma Network, a smuggling organization that trades in drug and illegal wildlife products. The network shipped its goods out of ports in Pemba, Mozambique, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Mombasa. Last year, authorities in Uganda arrested the head of the network, Liberian national Moazo Kroma. In 2017, Kenyan police arrested two other key figures, brothers Ibrahim Akasha and Baktash Akasha. The brothers were extradited to the U.S., where they are now serving long-term jail sentences. Alastair Nelson works with the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime, a network of 500 experts in the field of human rights, democracy, governance, and development issues. Speaking Wednesday at an online discussion, Nelson said such high-profile arrests have been made possible by authorities from different countries working together.
One of the reasons that we saw this law enforcement success is that we had long-term investigations by groups that were mandated to work across different countries and work with different local law enforcement authorities. So that was the USDA with the Akashas, it was U.S. Fish and Wildlife with the Kroma case, and the China Anti-Smuggling Bureau. And they used traditional long-term investigation methods. So they used a lot of human intelligence. They got close to the organized crime groups. But key is that they had to work very, very closely in partnership with trusted national law enforcement authorities.
Corruption and political connections often are blamed for the failure of some African countries to arrest and prosecute high-level figures in the illegal drug and wildlife trades. Now, the global effort to save Africa's wild animals is yielding fruit. The Africa Wildlife Foundation shows elephant and rhino populations are on the rise in some parts of the continent. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Staying in Kenya, the Ministry of the Interior has ordered the Inspector General of Police to disarm members of the Nairobi County government following a string of physical fights between lawmakers, some of whom are licensed gun owners. Journalist Maureen Ojiambo has more from Nairobi.
Chaos has engulfed Nairobi's county government in recent days. City lawmakers have thrown both punches and chairs during the heated debates over a motion to oust the Speaker of the county's legislature. On Wednesday, Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i ordered the disarmament of Nairobi County lawmakers, some of whom carry guns. Though no one has fired their weapons in the assembly, Matiang'i says that in the heated debate, armed lawmakers may harm each other.
I've asked the Inspector General of Police today with the regional security team in Nairobi to disarm everyone around that county assembly, anyone who holds firearms, those that there could be people. We already collected 14 guns. I suspect there could probably be more firearms. And let them tell the firearm licensing and control board to cancel all the licenses and withdraw those firearms from them.
Police officers stormed the Nairobi County Assembly earlier this week to restore order. Matiang'i says A large number of security forces in Nairobi's central business district are deployed around the county assembly premises due to chaos.
Our security deployment around the CBD in Nairobi, 25 to 30% of it is around the county assembly of Nairobi. And most of that is because of what happens around there is just pure criminality. And we cannot go on this way. There are decisions that need to be made.
But some lawmakers in Kenya's capital say police are to blame for violence too. Earlier this week, a video emerged showing officers assaulting Nairobi lawmaker Patricia Mudheu on the county assembly premises after a chaotic session. Speaking after the incident, Ms. Mudheu said that she was feeling unwell when the police gained entry and dispersed them.
Police actually gained entry. As I was seated in our lounge, there were some tear gas and people came running towards my side. And since I couldn't run because I'm unwell, I just decided to sit. Immediately, police approached and, you know, they were telling us to get out. But to my shock, one police hit me. I have some marks and he couldn't stop. There were four of them. And despite me, like, lying down, they didn't stop. They continued beating me. I was unarmed in my place of work.
The Federation for Women Lawyers in Kenya has called for action to be taken on police officers that were captured on camera brutalizing Mudheu. Nancy Kielu, the Federation chairperson, said that there are increased cases of use of excessive force by police on unarmed civilians.
What we witnessed were actions against women who are carrying out lawful duties at their place of work. This cannot go unaccounted for. We shall therefore be commencing specific legal procedures to ensure that we safeguard women's spaces of work without fear of intimidation.
On Wednesday, Kenya's Director of Criminal Investigation ordered the police accused of assaulting Mudheu to be interdicted after investigations. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Sudanese Muslims are celebrating the Eid al-Adha holiday today, but amid the COVID-19 outbreak, the festivities aren't the same as in other years. Sudanese officials are calling on citizens to continue observing precautionary public health measures to avoid new infections during the celebrations. Journalist Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Hundreds of heads of sheep could be seen along main roads leading in and out of Sudan's capital, Khartoum, Thursday, as families prepared for the Eid of Al-Adha feast. The feast in which Muslim families traditionally slaughter a sheep for a festive family meal marks the end of the annual Muslim pilgrimage to Mecca. 43-year-old Umm Muhammad Jabir, her face covered by a traditional cloth, accompanies her husband at one of the livestock markets along Jebel Aulia Road in Khartoum's Kalakla neighborhood. They are looking to buy a sheep for their family of five. Jabir says, this year it is difficult to celebrate Eid with an extended family due to COVID-19 travel restrictions.
Before, we used to go and visit some of our families or we go for outing. But now, we can't do that anymore. My small family members are aware about the ongoing coronavirus and all of us are strictly following the precautionary measures. We avoid all social gatherings by all means. So this time, we shall celebrate it alone as the small family.
35-year-old Murtada Khidir is one of the livestock vendors. He wears a brown locally made face mask and says livestock vendors try to follow all health directives to avoid getting infected. Khidir says even though the pandemic has affected their business, they are still happy that families are able to afford to buy sheep.
We maintain social distancing and most of our customers have their sanitizers in their cars, but they will wear face masks, including children, all the time. And thanks God, up to now we have not experienced any positive case among our people here in the market.
Sudanese officials are urging the public to take precautions against COVID-19 during the Eid holiday. Suleiman Mohammed Bashar is an official at the Sudan's Ministry of Religious Affairs He has directed imams and their congregations to take precautions during the Eid prayers and celebrations.
All imams should shorten the duration of the prayer by choosing short verses from the Holy Quran. They should also shorten the homily to shortest time possible. All congregations should be wearing masks or use their religious scarf if they can't afford providing masks. All should carry along with them the prayer mat.
On Wednesday, Professor Sadiq Taur, who heads the Sudanese Government Committee Against COVID-19, tells press that 14 of Sudan's 18 states have not recorded new infections in the last 2 weeks. He says that is an encouraging sign and applauded citizens for following health directives. But he urges people to remain vigilant against the disease during the Eid festivity.
The committee therefore urges all to maintain their precautionary measures for the next 3 weeks to ensure that we are safe and to avoid any other new infections of the pandemic. We also here notifying all travelers who might be coming to the country that they should undertake a test from a recognized laboratory through our embassies in the respective countries.
Since February, Sudan has recorded more than 11,000 COVID-19 cases. Over 700 people have died. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
As the number of confirmed COVID-19 infections in Nigeria increases, contact tracing of patients in the country's communities is becoming more difficult for health officials. Nigeria's Presidential Task Force Committee on COVID-19 has criticized some Nigerians who refuse to assist contact tracers due to fear and stigma. But in some communities, local leaders have stepped up to help the tracers do their job. Timothy Obiezu has more from Abuja.
Daniel Sila is the town crier in this Mabushi village near Abuja City. Occasionally, he disseminates vital information from the village chief to people who live in the community. But in recent weeks, his message has been about COVID-19 and ways to prevent it. Sila says he also helps health officials with their contact tracing mission in the village.
They come with a helicopter.
Sila says they came in their vehicles. I wore coronavirus protection clothing with them. This community was among the first in the Abuja region to record COVID-19 infections. Danjuma Dogo, the community secretary, says cases have increased exponentially.
First time was about 7. Second was about 14. The conclusion, when that test was done, I think it was about 70-something.
Health authorities responded by conducting extensive testing in Mabushi. But as more positive cases were discovered, it became a challenge to trace them. They sought an audience with the community heads, and officials like Danjuma Dogo were assigned to help health workers locate positive cases.
And they came with the list. We give them a quick response by working together with them to fish out those who was affected. I was part of the committee because the list was with me. We have to go around and be checking who and who is affected.
So far, Nigeria has recorded more than 41,000 cases of COVID-19, but the fear and stigma attached to the disease have limited the number of people who show up for testing or report symptoms. Last month, the Presidential Task Force Committee on Coronavirus criticized the reluctance of Nigerians to aid health workers or participate in contact tracing. The committee says unless Nigerians change their attitudes, the pandemic cannot be brought under control. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
It's time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, JC. We begin the sports with the World Athletics Council approving new dates for the World Under-20 Championships Nairobi 2020. The World Under-20 Championships will now be held in Nairobi, Kenya from 17th to the 22nd of August 2021, 1 week after the Tokyo Olympic Games. Stay with Athletics World 10,000 meters champion Ugandan Joshua Cheptegei says he's confident he will make it to the season opening Diamond League meet in Monaco. Bamako, the long-distance runner, is not happy that COVID-19 inadvertently interrupted one of his most successful seasons.
We are being pushed to the walls when it comes to opportunities, when it comes to racing abroad in Europe, in America, in Asia. So this means that we cannot make the most of our career. My plans earlier on, of course, has been to win the Olympic Games, like a 10K gold, and of course also medal in the 5K. So perhaps, maybe if it all goes well, perhaps next year I can still go back to Tokyo and do what I'm best at doing, and that's winning the gold.
Now to Nigeria, where the country's Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Sunday Dairy, says henceforth the Nigerian Football Federation will deregister football clubs who fail to meet club licensing rules.
What we've had in the past is that several of these clubs have found a way to get licensed and approved to compete without fulfilling this. I think we're entering a new regime of enforcement, and we hope that that will protect the players, because without the players, you know, you can't talk about football and the domestic league.
Finally, renowned lawyer and writer Bestin Kazadi, who made history by becoming the first woman ever to be elected as president of Democratic Republic of Congo football giants AS Vita Club early this month, has been speaking on her new role. Kazadi told my colleague James Butty that her gender is not a limitation in succeeding in a position dominated by men.
Do you think that being a woman will put more pressure on you to prove yourself? After all, the football world is dominated by men.
I have fought all my life for strong leadership, and my election is a lever. As president, it's a large African club. Confirms that nothing is impossible, and that it does not matter whether one is a woman or a man, when the passion with a goal, courage, and daring to realize a dream, anything is possible. Certainly, my success will serve as a model, a pulse for young girls.
That's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jason, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. We look forward to your next report on Monday. Bala Sidibe, a founding member of the seminal West African music group Orchestra Baobab, has died, the group's record label announced. In the 1970s, Orchestra Baobab was one of Senegal's most famous groups. Their songs, like this one called Dimu War, fused West African music with Latin, especially Cuban music. With musicians from Togo, Guinea, Morocco, Nigeria, and Senegal, the group represented Pan-African. The group's administrator, Thierna Coyote, described Sidibe as the pillar of the group. He told the Senegal press agency that Sidibe was two musicians in one because he sang and played the timpani drums. Coyote said that the day before his death, Sidibe was rehearsing with the band in Dakar in preparation for Orchestra Baobab's 50th anniversary. The band's record label, World Circuit, said, quote, Bala was a giant of African music and a great and gentle man, end quote. That's it for this Friday, July 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of managing editor James Butty, producer Nicole Beckford, and the rest of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great day.
Thank you.